He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Caught by Boston College. I don't believe it. It's a touchdown. The Eagles win it.
And the kick is blocked. Appalachian State has stunned the college football world.
James.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone. He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Welcome to another episode of the Walk On Redshirts podcast. I am your host, Aaron, and with me, my co-hosts, Intern Gibble and Jake. How are you fellas doing? It's been 2 weeks since we last talked for an episode. We are a day late on this episode, but be dropping this on Tuesday instead of a Monday, unfortunately. But how are you guys doing?
Not everything still feels the same. Time doesn't move. We're just in a Groundhog Day episode for the rest of our life at this point.
Yeah, mine's kind of getting back to normal. A little bit, little by little.
I'm ready to go back to work. As weird as that sounds, I'm ready to actually go back to work.
I thought you were back to work.
Yeah, I thought I was too. And then, you know, and then they told me not to come. So now I might be going back to work in 2 weeks, might be 1 week. It could be in 3 days. I don't know.
Okay.
I think I'll be back to work by July 4th. I'm not really sure yet. My work from home consisted of me watching Netflix all day today.
Jesus.
That's a rough day.
Poor you.
Yeah, I did a couple things on my computer, did some random things, and was like, well, that was enough for today. I have to space this out for a week.
Hey, yeah. Grub. I mean, it does continue to feel like time doesn't move. Although the first, for the longest time, it's just been like, you know, what month is it? Is it March? Is it April? Is it May? Hey, it's mid-June. And it finally hit me when I was mapping out our schedule for upcoming episodes. And I was like, wow, we are really not that far away from college football. I mean, I'm still assuming that we're going to have it. I mean, obviously, we'll discuss it a little bit later, but COVID's are spiking a bit more back up here with things starting to open up a bit more. So we'll see where that ends up taking us. But yeah, mapping it out, I was like, okay, we're really not all that far away. I mean, we're, well, let's shade over 2 months.
We're 75 days away from the first college football season. On Monday, it will be 74 when people listen to this, because every day I tweet out a new picture of a person wearing that jersey number. So tomorrow will be 74 days until college football comes back.
Who's number 74? Do you want to give us a sneak preview?
No, because I go to the Athletic article every day and it gives me the most notable players that's worn every jersey number, and I just pick someone from the list and find a picture.
I was kind of curious how you were getting these numbers, because there were some great players, but like guys that I was just like, oh, okay, that's random.
Yeah, they have a list of the top players to wear each number, and I just have it saved on my app, and I just scroll to the number. I usually forget, and I have to try to remember who the yesterday's was.
Fantastic.
I just know today's with Orlando Pace because it was an Ohio State player.
You love to
shocking.
See it.
Shocking. The bias knows no bounds.
75 didn't really have too many good people, and they picked the most notable as Orlando Pace. So, you know, my options were kind of limited. Let me see if I can find who else wore 75, because you're just sticking with linemen. So usually offensive linemen are not the, you know, most sexy position or potentially even most well-known. Number 75, we had Joe Green, Aaron Taylor, Jim Covert, Barrett Jones, Will Shields, Larry Jacobson, Jake Matthews, Greg, I can't, nope, not going to try that one. Lincoln Kennedy, Chris McIntosh, Lomas Brown, Greg Marks, Harry Carson, Chris Hinton, Mitch Hyatt, Claude Humphrey, John Witt, Ken Rice.
I knew like three of those names.
Yeah, and they were all ones that got drafted in our line.
Yep.
Yeah, like that's Barrett exactly Jones, Will Shields, Jake Matthews. Yeah, that was about it.
Yep. Orlando Pace.
Oh, yeah, and Orlando Pace. Let's see. Oh, 74. We John Hicks is 74, so he might be a I know who number 74 is going to be. It's going to be the Blind Side.
Oh, there you go.
Good college football player. Fucking awful movie.
It was okay.
It was not good.
It was a fun
it made Draft Day look like an Oscar winner. I mean, and I hate Draft Day.
Draft Day's only good scene is the last 10 minutes of the movie. Pancake eating motherfucker.
Oh god. All right. Well, in this episode, we're finishing out our all-time team drafts. We have quarterbacks and running backs. We'll each be selecting in no particular order, two quarterbacks and three running backs for our teams. That'll end it. And then we'll allow you, the fans, and our audience to vote who has the best team overall. We'll also vote on who has the best quarterback and running back squad out there. So this finishes this up. And then in 2 weeks, we'll be back with a fan appreciation episode. We'll speak a little bit more about that at the end, but essentially dedicating an episode to talking what you guys want to talk about, basically because we have a filler. And then immediately after that, we're shifting and doing 5 straight weeks. We'll be back to weekly episodes, tackling previews of each conference. This year I did not forget to do Notre Dame. I have that down for the ACC. I almost forgot them last year, and we penciled them into the SEC, which Notre Dame fans probably don't like because when they face SEC teams, they lose. So sorry about that. But then we'll be back on a weekly schedule. And then once the season starts, we're actually going to shifting to 2 episodes a week, unlike one like we did last year. That way we can break down games a little bit more, give a little bit more in depth about each game. And then also in terms of previewing the week after that, instead of feeling like we have to combine everything into a 2-hour chunk of time, we can expand and talk a little bit more. So we'll be back on a weekly schedule here in a couple weeks, actually. So that'll be nice to get us in just before the season, because we're pretty close. So before we get to that, Intern Gil, I believe you have some news for us.
Indeed, we do. We will start this news with obviously the negative news, because that's just where it always goes. We had about 2 weeks ago, Tennessee Volunteer running back Tim Jordan was arrested. It would have been 2 Saturdays ago at this point. This was in Lakewood, Florida. He had a felony charge of carrying a concealed weapon and 2 misdemeanor drug charges. According to the online records, he had less than 20 grams of marijuana on him and had possession / use of narcotic paraphernalia. And then the weapon that he had, he just didn't have a permit for it. He's been released on $2,000 bond, so not an overly bad situation for him, but still definitely not a good one to be in.
No bueno.
Nope, no bueno at all. In Florida, they have approved the bill for name, image, and likeness for student athletes to profit from endorsements starting next summer. This is just in Florida. It kind of puts more pressure on the NCAA to kind of get a across the board standard moving even quicker than it had been before. But yet another good step in the right direction for student athletes to be able to make money off of themselves.
Hey, intern, what state was that legalized it or passed Florida. Bill? Florida. Who's back of the week? The U. Come down to Miami, make some money, folks. Let's
go. Strippers and cocaine are back.
Yep.
Wait, they went away?
You want your face on the marquee of a strip club? University of Miami. Let's go.
Oh, goodness. As if that school didn't already have enough party problems. But it's fine.
Piss off.
Anyway, switching gears here, USC has officially welcomed back Reggie Bush, ending its NCAA mandated disassociation with him after 10 years. So it's great to have him back there. Now they just need to say his Heisman it belongs to him, even though we all recognize it.
Just yeah, back. This was a long time coming. Give him back his little statue. There's still some horse shit. Still recognize Reggie as a Heisman winner. I don't give a shit. He didn't kill anybody like OJ. OJ still has his. Well, he had his. He sold his. But
Johnny Manziel literally took money too, and he still has his.
Listen. Let's the not NCAA try to is... drag Johnny Manziel under the bus here.
What yeah, is he did this, that to himself.
The this NCAA is a stand-up organization, and we should
this
be
This is not a witch
that.
Hunt, folks.
Yeah, he just, you know, Johnny Manziel in the NFL just, you know, skipped a game when he was injured to go to Vegas. Moving on.
Anyway, Wisconsin and Notre Dame scheduled to play this season in Lambeau Field. The Packers CEO Mark Murphy confirmed that that game is still on. So that's some good news there. Love to see the green lights on games being played this fall. Just we need it to continue. So we still have college football. Switching back into some more negative news. Ex Auburn football coach Pat Dye, passed away back in late May. He had tested positive for coronavirus, but he also had a kidney related issue. So it's an unfortunate loss for the University of Auburn, as well as his family and friends and everybody. All right, and in Texas. We've got two bits of news out of Texas here. Texas safety BJ Foster fractured a bone in his hand after getting into a fight with his car bumper, according to Tom Herman. I don't know how you get into a fight with a car, but he found that the side of his car was damaged, and no one left a note. So obviously a hit and run, got angry, punched his car. And now he's in a cast. So, smart kid.
Well, hey, dumb decision, but I feel like we've all been there.
I think we all would have done the exact
maybe
same.
Not shattered our hand or anything, but like still got mad, probably punched something, probably shouldn't have hurt yourself, you know, whatever. Yeah. It happens to the best.
I had a
of
friend
us.
In college who was drunk and punched a door that he thought was wooden. It ended up being metal and breaking his middle knuckle.
Yeah.
Was it like painted like looking like wood or?
Yeah, he had like a vine. It had like a cover on it to make it look like a wood door. But it was, it was steel.
Was his name Kyle and did he drink a lot of Monster?
No, his name was Chris and he doesn't drink energy drinks.
Oh, no. That doesn't fit the stereotype.
My alternate name would have been Chaz, but yeah, that's a Kyle move.
Anyway, still sticking with Texas, Texas defensive back Anthony Cook announced he will no longer play for the University of Texas. He tweeted out, this was about a week and a half ago, I believe, due to unfortunate situations, I will not be playing another snap for the University of Texas. It has nothing to do with anyone or anything. Please respect my decision. That says a whole lot of nothing. So, really, I haven't heard anything else about why he is deciding not to play for them. I don't know if either of you have heard anything either, but it's just a weird situation. It seems like he would be on his way out the door, according to that tweet. But that tweet has also been deleted, so I have no idea where he actually stands on it. Just a weird thing happening down there in Texas.
Yeah, it seemed like it was kind of a surprise to people in Texas and then deleting it. I guess we'll see if he stays on the team or not.
Yeah. All right. In Clemson, Justin Ross is going to be out for the season. So this is kind of some massive news. Justin Ross, was going to be the number one receiver for Clemson again. And not having him on that team is going to be a pretty big blow. He is going to have is a congenital fusion in his spine. So that's going to keep him off the field for the entire season. The operation went great, according to Ross on social media. We're obviously rooting for the best for him. And hopefully his recovery goes well so he can get back on the football field, because he is incredibly talented. So the last three bits of news here, of general news at least, kind of have to go along with the racial injustice going on in the world here. I think we kind of need to address it a little bit without really diving in, since we haven't yet. So obviously, everybody knows what's happening in the world. I think our podcast is meant to sort of take a break from that. But in the college football world, there's still some racial injustices happening where coaches are using racial slurs and different things like that. Pretty much in Iowa, the strength coach, Chris Doyle, it came out that he had been kind of, he kind of been mistreating some of the players in the program, who happened to be black, and the players came out and kind of, they obviously wanted to bring that to the attention of the Iowa football program, the athletic directors, and the school in general. They also made some allegations towards the head coach, Kirk Ferentz, and several other on-field assistants. At this point, Chris Doyle is no longer a coach at Iowa. They mutually parted ways. So definitely the smart move for them. At Clemson, you obviously had the assistant who had also used racial slurs. We had accusations from former players that Dabo had allowed the use of racial slurs directed at players during practice. And now at the University of Oklahoma State, or Oklahoma State University, we had Mike Gundy wearing a OAN t-shirt.
I have an update on Mike Gundy then.
Okay.
Once you finish, I'll give my update.
Okay. So that OAN stands for One American News, which is a far-right news network that's been known to promote conspiracy theories and is often cited by President Trump. So definitely far-right. And so Chuba basically came out and said today that he will not be doing anything with Oklahoma State until things change in response to that shirt.
And time for an update.
Okay.
Because Mike Gundy and Chuba Hubbard actually just released about a 1 minute statement, a video. Chuba pretty much said that he should have addressed it with Mike Gundy behind the scenes. And Mike Gundy said that he should have been more sensitive to the issues going on in America right now. And that everybody's going to keep practicing and going forward with team activities.
Perfect. See, that, like, that's the kind of thing that needs to happen across the board. We had the whole Drew Brees incident. That got blown up, even though I think we all know Drew Brees' character. That got blown up. He addressed it with his teammates. Things are kind of cooled off. I think you're seeing that a lot around both the NFL and in college football. But one thing that you're also seeing a lot of is the players in both professional and college sports are starting to use their voices to call out the injustices, which is a great thing to see. So that's pretty much all I have on that. If you guys want to add any further comments.
I mean, it's the double back to Iowa. I mean, it's a huge, huge hit for Iowa's program. And also, to an extent, Kirk Ferentz is kind of skating right through this. But with Doyle leaving, I mean, that's your bread and butter, is that offensive line.
He was the highest paid strength and conditioning coach in the country.
Exactly. Yep. And you see it when they pump out these big kids every year, offensive linemen, tight ends, you know, those strength positions. We'll see what impact this has on Iowa. Doyle's been there quite a while. I mean, that's a pretty major blow. And we'll kind of keep track of what ends up happening with Iowa going forward here. And as for the Oklahoma State thing, obviously Chuba had the blow up today about it. And, you know, there were certainly things that had to lead up to that. He probably likely wouldn't just blow up over the t-shirt, but certainly understand it. We'll see what ends up happening with Oklahoma State going forward as well. But it's pretty imperative that everybody there kind of goes into damage control ASAP on that. I tweeted out today, I was like, Chuba Hubbard's a Heisman candidate running back. If he decided today he wanted to enter the transfer portal, he'd have a waiver the very next business day from the NCAA. So get that fixed. Keep your guys in-house. Try and figure out what you can do. Obviously, it's Oklahoma. It's Stillwater. It's not exactly the most diverse place on the planet. Chuba comes from Canada. Alberta, which is not very diverse either. I mean, kind of keep track of the Oklahoma State stuff going forward now as well. But I think it's important, and I think these players are starting to realize that they have power, and they've got to use it to make good and to fix a lot of wrongs in this world, and especially on college campuses where these head coaches are making millions of dollars off of these athletes who, I mean, they get their scholarship, but they don't make a dime off of it. Unless you're going to attend the University of Miami in the next couple of years.
Or if you get into between, you know, 1990 and 2003, when you got free strippers.
And actually went farther than that.
Abortions.
Quite up until about 2009 or so. These are certainly things to keep a bit of an eye on moving forward. And it is good that these guys are speaking up and want to hold these coaches accountable for their actions. Because these coaches, especially the strength coach, you know, obviously players are with that coach for so long throughout the season that, you know, the head coaches and all that, they're like another completely other family for these kids. And if they're not doing their job properly and they're not being held accountable, then it's just going to run rampant and you don't want that. So you kind of have to have a check in power somewhere. And I think it's good that the players realize that they have to be that check in power at some point down the line and are speaking up a bit more on it.
The one thing about the Iowa situation before we move on, I don't know if it's going to have a big of an impact if you want to talk about a football perspective, because conditioning is nearly over. You only have about another month or so before the NCAA is going to start letting them practice. So all of the conditioning and workouts, whatnot, are nearly done for the year. And they have the program together probably for the next month anyways with the assistant strength coaches. I'm going to be curious to see how it goes moving forward for next season when they do their conditioning.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think you're definitely going to see an impact there with that for sure. All right, so we've got one other bit of news here that is in the transfer portal. Nebraska wide receiver J.D. Spielman is entering the portal. His reason part of it is he went home to Minnesota in March for mental health reasons. I guess we could see Minnesota as a potential landing spot for him. But him being one of the most productive players on that Nebraska team, he probably could end up anywhere. He can kind of have his pick of schools. That is our news for the week.
All right. Yeah. I mean, that's a tough hit to Nebraska there. Your best, probably your best wide receiver on that team. You lost a 4-star recruit to the transfer portal to, I think Henry Gray ended up going to Florida Atlantic, if I remember correctly. Or Florida.
Yeah, I think he went to FAU. He went to one of them.
He went to one of the directional Florida institutes. But yeah, tough hits for Nebraska here. And Scott Frost moving forward, for sure.
Speculations, Bielman might go to Minnesota, which would be a huge get for them with their loss of Tyler Johnson. And then they could put Rashad Bateman and J.D. Spielman together.
I'm drawing a blank on his name, but Minnesota's third wide receiver last year was pretty good too. So, I'll have to look that up.
J.D. Spielman just so happens to be the GM of the Vikings, I think, still.
Oh, yeah. Rick Spielman.
Yes, that's Chris Spielman's brother.
Yeah, I mean, if he can get there, then certainly. It would be a really big get as well there. Who wouldn't want to play for PJ Fleck? Let's be honest.
Guys who turned down a scholarship offer.
Chris Ottman Bell. That's the name I'm looking for.
According to 24/7 Sports, he also had offers from Iowa, Michigan, and Iowa State.
Okay, Minnesota. If he's a wide receiver, he doesn't want to go to Michigan or Iowa.
Well, true. And he did take a visit to Northwestern as well. But
okay, he doesn't want to go there either.
That'd be a very, very strange place to go.
No, you don't want to get the ball thrown from Hunter Johnson.
I don't even think Hunter Johnson's a starter there.
I'm not doubling down on that this year. I refuse to do that one.
Their quarterback's name is Aiden something. I remember. I don't know why. Like the dumbest
thing. Such a Northwestern name.
The dumbest things stick in my head, but I remember. I think it was Northwestern versus Purdue or some others. I think it was those two, and they both had a quarterback start named Aiden, and I just made up a random stat that this was the first time that's ever happened, which it might have. I don't know how to look that up. So I do remember their quarterback's name is Aiden. I just don't remember his last name. But that's for the preview episode. I will learn it for then. I have to get a copy of some magazines to do some research. All right. Jake, why don't you take it away for a ad read before we get into the draft?
So you guys have heard a lot about Smack Apparel, and you're probably tired of me reading the same statement over and over and over and over again. So you just remember, you can get 20% off Smack Apparel. This week, we got our own shirts. You can see mine on Twitter because now I'm officially a Kansas fan because I have my drink on or Rock Chalk shirt. Gonna wear that thing all around every college football Saturday. That I might just wear both. I might wear an Ohio State shirt and then put that on when Kansas plays. Because what shirts did you guys get?
I got an Eagles shirt. It's Philly Dilly with old Benjamin Franklin on it.
I'm not surprised that you picked that one.
Oh, God.
Well, my first choice was my unofficial favorite team, the Los Angeles Rams.
They're Arizona State.
No, it's his second team, and they're going to coincidentally win the Pac-12 this year.
I hope so. Rooting for it, obviously. Firm for Herm.
And Foles, you got a Dolphin shirt, I believe you said?
Yeah, I got a Don Chola Memorial t-shirt. It's pretty nice. The feeling of the t-shirts are pretty soft. So I'm pretty excited to get it washed and then get it into the rotation.
So you can be like us. Go to smackapparel.com, use promo code WALKON, and get 20% off your next order.
All right, folks. Let's round out our greatest teams of all time with the most interesting one for sure. Also the one, obviously, there's going to be a lot of back and forth and conjecture on. We have quarterbacks and running backs. Again, you could take them however you want, but we need two quarterbacks for each team, and we need three running backs for each team. Intern Gibble is going to start. I will go second, and then Jake will pick third, and then snake draft as we have continued. So let's go ahead and round this out. Gibble, you are on the clock.
All right. Well, if I've learned anything from fantasy football drafts, it's don't draft a Heisman or not a Heisman, a quarterback number one. So
you're not allowed to pick a Heisman player on this pick. I hope you know that. You made the rules.
Yep. No, I said quarterback. I'm going
actually to pick new a rule. Timeout. New rule. Intern has to pick all pre-1930s players.
Didn't exist then.
Do I have anyone on that? I don't think I have anybody on my board from before then. So that's not happening.
I'm redrafting Bronco Nagurski. He's going to be a two-way player.
Wow. All right. Anyway, with my number one pick, I'm going to take Barry Sanders, Okie State running back. Tab. I mean, he feels like the unanimous number one overall here. Obviously, College Football Hall of Famer, Heisman winner, Maxwell Award winner, Walter Camp Award, and a unanimous All-American in 1998. Holds the record for most rushing yards in a season with just over 2,600. Has the most rushing touchdowns in a season with 37. Just all around a phenomenal running back.
All right. I was kind of hoping he would slip to me. And part of the reason I wanted to first pick was so that I could get Barry. But I also thought maybe intern was just dumb enough to not take him number one. All right. With the second pick, I too am going to stick with the running back here. The most exciting football.
Well, I'll just close my tab now.
Tied for the most exciting football player I've ever gotten to watch in my lifetime. Reggie Bush, we talked about him earlier. Yep, I'm gonna close my tab. I have number two on my running back big board here. 2005 Heisman Trophy winner. Mark Emmert can never take that away from my brain. 2005 Doak Walker and Walter Camp Awards. 2005 AP and Sporting News Player of the Year. Two-time Pac-10 Offensive Player of the Year. Two-time Consensus All-American. Kick returner, punt returner, running back, Reggie Bush, averaged, I think, like over 8 yards a carry that Heisman season. Just incredible. Obviously, the 1-2 punch with Lendale White and Matt Leinart back there. One of the best trios in college football history. So, yeah, Reggie Bush is my number one pick here.
All right. Since you guys took my first two, we're going to go.
Question. Do you just have like 17 tabs opened?
Always.
That's actually what I do.
I don't feel like trying to find everything again. I just open them to where I want them. That way, when I have a chance to pick, I can just read what I need to read.
Good Lord. Like, I legitimately write out a big board for these because I don't want to have 17 tabs open because it gives me anxiety.
Well, I mean, I have a board, but like, I just go to the Wikipedia pages to read all the awards so I don't have to write them all down.
Same. Nah,
that's probably smart. It takes me roughly an hour to do that, but I don't have to worry about it anymore. This is the last time. So,
I'm going to take Herschel Walker with my first pick then. Three-time SEC Player of the Year, three-time Consensus All-American, three-time All-SEC, national champion, Heisman Trophy winner, Maxwell Award winner, Walter Camp Award winner, Sporting News Player of the Year, UPI Player of the Year, numbers retired by Georgia, and was ranked the number two greatest college football player ever by College Football 150. And then played the USFL and as a two-time All-USFL winner too, but phenomenal running back for Georgia. For a school that has as good of a lineage of running backs as they are, he might be the best running back to come out of Georgia ever, which is absolutely saying something. And he just happens to be in the College Football Hall of Fame as well. So that'll be my first pick. We'll start with that. And my second one, I don't want to do this, but we're going to do it anyways. We're going to take the quarterback out of Florida. We're going to take Timmy Tebow. Oh,
thank God. I didn't want to. I put him on my board, but I was like, I don't want to have to pick Tebow.
Yeah. See, I didn't really want to pick Tebow, but like, he's got so many awards. It's like, it's hard to choose against him. He was so good in college. Like, yeah, he wasn't like actually a really good passer, but like, he just knew how to win. You know, he won the Maxwell Award Trophy twice and won the Manny Award SEC Player of the Year twice. Two-time national champion, AP Player of the Year, Davey O'Brien, two-time All-American, two-time Heisman Trophy finalist, along with winning it, second-team All-American, and three-time first-team All-SEC. And according to Chris Rainey, his speech was not the reason they won the national championship. But Tim Tebow, absolutely phenomenal quarterback for that Florida Gator team. Urban Meyer, probably the perfect quarterback to run his system at Florida.
And it's great because if we transition these teams to baseball, you at least have a guy that'll hit 200. So,
yeah, I'm going to have a guy that hits 200 in double A. Could hit some bombs.
I'm really glad you took Tebow here because it leaves me with the quarterback I wanted the most. Taking Cam Newton here. A lot of talk after this past season that Joe Burrow had the best season for a quarterback. Maybe so, but Cam Newton had the most dominant season I've ever seen for a quarterback. He took an 8-5 Auburn team, undefeated. Gene Chizik, bad head coach, undefeated, won a national championship. Immediately after he left, they went back to 8-5. So if you're a baseball guy, like his WAR was at least 5. So 2010 Heisman winner, Maxwell winner, Walter Camp winner, and Davey O'Brien trophies, AP and Sporting News Player of the Year, consensus All-American and national champion Cam Newton. He's Herschel Walker playing quarterback, just an unreal athlete. Somebody sign him in the NFL. He's Cam Newton.
All right. I think with my second pick here, who do you think I'm taking here?
I'm not going to say it. I'm going to say it afterwards because you're taking with one of your two picks.
Well, I have two picks here. I'm going to take Vince Young with this one.
I hate you.
First quarterback.
I literally hate you.
Well, you had the option to take Vince Young, but you took Tim Tebow.
Yep.
My second quarterback.
Nope. Obviously a great quarterback, BCS national champion, Maxwell Award winner, Manning
Award. Did win Heisman.
I know he was a runner up, second place, still pretty dang good. But he's a Hall of Famer as a runner up. I think he's doing pretty well. Obviously Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year, for his career, ended up with, 6,000 passing yards, in his three seasons with Texas. 44 touchdowns, just a great, great football player. So we're taking him as QB1 for this team. And let's go with running back number 2. I think we're going to go for old Eddie George.
Wow, I didn't think he'd go that way.
Yeah, did you think Archie was going to be it?
Yeah, so I'm just going to take him with my next pick. Spoiler alert, because I'll just take the 2-time Heisman.
Unless Folsom gets him first.
Anyway, he won't take him.
I'm literally already penciling Jake in for Archie Griffin.
You might as well. He's up on my Wikipedia pages.
I would never draft him in 100 years. That second Heisman is a sham.
I mean, I was torn between both of them. It was basically splitting hairs. But in Eddie George's senior season, he rushed for nearly 2,000 yards at 24 touchdowns, rushing as well as a receiving touchdown. College Football Hall of Famer, won the Heisman, Walter Camp Award, Maxwell Award, Doak Walker Award, Big Ten MVP, just you name it, he won it. So
Penn State wanted him as a linebacker.
Wow, that would have been something. Anyway, that's number 3.
Great. Awesome. All right. Shit. There's a lot of different ways I want to go with this pick. Let's go ahead and take Bo Jackson here. 1985 Heisman Trophy, 1985 Walter Camp Award, 1985 Sporting News Player of the Year, 2-time consensus All-American. 3-time first team all SEC, number 34, is retired at Auburn, something you don't see a ton with college players. And he is a College Football Hall of Famer. So we're going to take Bo Jackson here to get my second running back. And go ahead with your two picks, Jake.
Okay, well, I already spoiled one. I'm just going to do Archie Griffin now. 2-time Heisman Trophy winner, 2-time Walter Camp Award winner, 2-time Sporting News Player of the Year, 2-time UPI Player of the Year, Walter Camp or Maxwell Award, 2-time Big Ten MVP, 3-time All-American, 3-time First Big Ten, and the only 2-time Heisman Trophy winner in college football history. And we probably won't see another one for a while because nobody likes giving two to the same player. but he was a part of Ohio State's success in the 70s, and his awards speak for himself if you're the two-time Heisman Trophy winner.
Even though one's a sham.
Hey, everybody still made him an All-American that year. He just he just got all his touchdowns vultured.
Yeah, like, and this is the problem with, like, pre-like internet era college football was guys winning awards that they didn't really deserve because they played on a really good team. Or in some cases, Paul Hornung, you played on a shitty team, you were a shitty quarterback, and you somehow won the Heisman.
Pete Johnson had like a lot less yards and his yards per carry were way down, but he had 25 touchdowns.
Jesus Christ.
Because he just apparently vultured all of R.G. Griffin's touchdowns.
Yeah, didn't R.G. Griffin have 4 touchdowns that year?
Yes, he did.
Jesus. Imagine a guy winning the Heisman next year with 4 touchdowns. You better be putting up 10 yards a carry on 250 carries if you're winning with those statistics, bud. Good Lord.
He averaged 4.1 yards per catch.
He only had 14
catches.
Wow, that's a lot for that day and age, to be honest with you, for a running back.
He was the third leading receiver.
Checks out.
And the leading one only had 24 catches.
Wow.
All right. So with
my... Come a long way from then to Brian Hart line.
Yeah, very long way. Very long way. With my next pick, I'm going to take... I'm going to go with a Wisconsin running back. I feel like you got to go with a Wisconsin running back because there's like 90 of them. We're going to take the OG. We're going to take Ron Dayne here. Ooh. 99 Heisman Trophy winner, 99 Maxwell Award, Walter Camp, Chick Harley, Doak Walker, Jim Brown. That's a lot of names. That's a lot of names, actually. Big Ten MVP, Offensive Player of the Year, AP Player of the Year, Sporting News Player of the Year, All-American, Co-Freshman of the Year. He is the all-time leading rusher in college football history with 7,125 yards, a total of 71 touchdowns, never had less than 15 touchdowns in a season, and really is what's helped kick off these Wisconsin running backs. Was the first one to – well, I think he's still the only Wisconsin player to win a Heisman, but I believe he was probably the first one invited because before that, Wisconsin wasn't very good at football. They didn't get good until the 90s until Barry Alvarez got there, and this really helped start what Wisconsin is now. But we'll take Ron Dayne, bust in the NFL, but a phenomenal, phenomenal college running back.
All right. Decent running back core there for you there, Jake. All right. So if you guys remember back when we did wide receivers, I ended up with Jerry Rice, Justin Blackman, and Randy Moss. In this draft, I have Reggie Bush, Cam Newton, Bo Jackson. I'm piecing together the most exciting offense of all time. So what I need now is backup quarterback. So I'm going to take the most exciting quarterback of all time, Johnny Manziel.
Shocking. He wasn't even on my board.
I wasn't sure, but Gibble was up after me, and I was like, yeah, that sly son of a bitch might try to steal him with one of his two picks. He needs another quarterback. So I'm going to get that pick out of the way now. 2012 Heisman Trophy, 2013 Heisman finalist, Davey O'Brien Award winner, Manning Award winner, AP and Sporting News Player of the Year, SEC Offensive Player of the Year, a consensus All-American, and a two-time first-team All-SEC. Obviously he was going to be on my team. The accolades are there. One of the most exciting players of all time, in my opinion. So he is my backup quarterback for this team. So Johnny Manziel and intern Gibble, go ahead with your last two picks.
All right, well, the good old recency bias is coming through in these last two picks.
Can I predict one of them?
Yeah.
You're going to take Joe Burrow.
Yep, that's one of
them. Joe Burrow and Jonathan Taylor?
No.
Derrick Henry.
There you go.
Wow. That's them.
Yeah, I mean, they were pretty obvious answers.
Two guys that didn't have them up board.
Yeah. See, Derrick Henry's a truck, and at running back, it's just, he's great. He's just a massive human being that's going to run over people. Also happened to win the Heisman, Maxwell Award, Doak Walker Award, Walter Camp, unanimous All-American, first team All-SEC, SEC Offensive Player of the Year. Just all around great for Alabama. In his senior year, rushed for, no, that's his high school stats. That's not helpful.
He shouldn't have won the Heisman that year, just saying.
Well, he did, and he had 2,200 rushing yards and 28 touchdowns in just his senior season. Totaled 35 or just under 3,600 for his career at Alabama and 42 touchdowns. Just like I said, a truck. So
Christian McCaffrey set the record for most all purpose yards that year.
Honestly, he was on my list because he was just electric, but I went for the awards. So that's why we went with Derrick. I'm pretty sure everybody is. And I think that's why people vote the way they do on our polls. Anyway, to wrap things up for myself here, Joe Burrow, the second quarterback on my team. Obviously, the recency bias is there, but the stats kind of back it up with, you know, 5,600 passing yards in a single season and 60 touchdowns. Like, you can't make those stats up. It was a phenomenal year. Can you read off
your junior year stats, please?
Sure. I mean, they weren't nearly as good. He still threw for just under 2,900 yards and 16 touchdowns.
Okay, but that's thank you. That was it.
I mean, that was the whole reason I didn't have him on my board was like, love Joe Burrow's season this year, but he also had a bad season, which Cam Newton only had one season. Vince Young was pretty much good this whole way. Tim Tebow was good his whole way. Manziel, Watson, Frazier.
Yeah, I mean, I had some other guys on my board here, but...
No, you didn't, Gebel. Just finish it off.
I mean, I did. anyway, dude won the national championship. That LSU team was obviously one of the most dominant we've seen. Won the Heisman, Maxwell Award, Walter Camp Award, Johnny Unitas Golden Arm Award, Davey O'Brien Award, Manning Award, Lombardi Award, AP College Football Player of the Year, Sporting News College Football Player of the Year, and unanimous All-American. So that's my team.
Are you sure they won the national championship? I feel like it was way too long ago.
Honestly, I was watching like half of it walking through Vegas. So I could have missed something.
Anyways.
All right. Look, here's the thing. This one's a very difficult one to do. And I know once Gibble gets us this graphic and Jake puts it on the Twitter, there's going to be a ton of people. Why isn't so-and-so on here? This person's my favorite running back of all time. Why is he not on your list? Yada, yada. So I apologize if your favorite guy isn't on here. It's tough. We're drafting 9 running backs. There's a ton of guys. Intern Gibble picked a shitty team, so I apologize for that as well. But at the end of the day, some guys are going to slip through the cracks. Last pick, I need a running back, and I have 5 guys out of 9 on my board still sitting here, but I'm going to stay true to my board at number 4 on the running back side. And I'm going to grab my favorite Miami Dolphin of all time, Ricky Williams.
I knew you were going to take him.
1998 Heisman Trophy winner. Also won the Walter Camp and Maxwell Awards that year. AP and Sporting News Player of the Year. 2-time Doak Walker Award winner. 2-time unanimous All-American. 2-time Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year. 3-time first team All Big 12. His number 34 is retired at the University of Texas, and he is a College Football Hall of Famer. Ricky Williams rounds out my running back group. I will say this one might be surprising. Number 5 on my list or on my big board was actually Jonathan Taylor, who I thought the Wisconsin running back might be, or the recency bias, because likely if he would have stayed one more year, he was going to shatter the all-time rushing record.
Oh yeah, he's only like 600 yards or something.
He was about 1,000, and he kept putting up 2,000 yards a season. So he would have, if he stayed healthy, he would have shattered it by 1,000 yards probably. But yeah, I had him number five on my big board. I had Tony Dorsett on here. I had Jim Brown on here, and I had LaDainian Tomlinson. Jim Brown's the guy who got screwed by Paul Hornung, by the way. Probably should have won the Heisman in 1956, but yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of good running backs. It's hard to leave some of these guys off. They were all very, very good. But unfortunately, that's the price you pay for a draft. So yeah, Reggie Bush, Bo Jackson, and Ricky Williams are my three running backs. I got 2, 3, and 4 on my board. I feel pretty confident about that. Jake, who is your final quarterback on your squad?
My final quarterback on my squad is Brock Berlin. No, just kidding. I'm taking Lamar Jackson.
Nope, I'm putting Brock Berlin into the final. Sorry.
I don't know who that is, but I'll write him in as well.
You at least have that awesome comeback against Florida. So.
No, I'm taking Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson, and that, this is my recency bias one. He was the Heisman Trophy in 16. He actually even put up better stats passing and rushing in 2017. Obviously, the NFL MVP this past year. But he was the Heisman Trophy in 16, was invited back in 17, All-American in 16, Sporting News Player of the Year in 16, AP Press Player of the Year, Walter Camp, Maxwell, two-time offensive ACC player of the year, two-time ACC offensive player of the year, ACC athlete of the year, was an absolute electric quarterback in college. And you know, he's known for his rushing abilities because he did rush for 4,000 yards in college in 3 seasons, but he also threw for over 9,000 yards in college as well. In his first year, he only started 8 games, but in 34 starts, he had 9,000 yards passing and 4,000 yards rushing and over 100 touchdowns. I had 109 total touchdowns. Just an absolutely phenomenal quarterback, electric in everything he did. And the one thing that always sticks out to me is this talent around him was always much less than when you look at teams like Clemson or Florida State. That the skill players on the outside, the running backs and wide receivers, a lot of them had guys that went to the NFL. You look at Clemson, they've always had guys like DeAndre Hopkins and T. Higgins and goes on. The Louisville wide receivers aren't nearly as talented, and he did all of this with the skill players around him.
Well, it always comes back to that bowl game against LSU where the offensive line literally just allowed LSU to run right through the line and sacked him almost every play. That's a good visual of how bad his surroundings were. When he left, they won like 2 games the very next year.
Yeah, I think the next year Petrino got fired after that because they were just so bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, regarding the guys, only 2 guys I had on my big board that were left, my football man crush, Deshaun Watson, was number 5 on here. Also the only guy I have listed that won an ESPY award. So there's that. And number 6, I had Tommy Frazier on here.
I had Michael Vick on mine. I had Eric Dickerson, Christian McCaffrey, Darren McFadden, and then you took Ricky Williams.
You should have just took Dickerson and Craig James.
I could have had the pony excess though.
Yeah, I had Troy Smith on my team.
Are you kidding?
Tony Dorsett, Marshall Faulk.
Are you actually put Troy Smith on your list?
Yeah,
he did. He played for Ohio State. That's all.
Yeah, but he was also one of the. He was one of the if everybody gets taken, that's who I might end up with.
No, he's not.
Well, I mean, you also said Mike Vick. I had Mike Vick above him.
Well, yeah.
And I had Peyton Manning on this team, too.
How many quarterbacks did you list? There was only a potential of 4 other ones that were going to be taken ahead of you.
Oh, I only needed to write 6.
I did write, I think I wrote 7.
Too many. And Troy Smith shouldn't have been one of them.
Seems like your big board was shoddy at best.
I mean,
because you listed like 4 guys right there.
Troy Smith threw for like 2,800 yards when he won the Heisman or something ridiculously low.
Well, you know.
Did you have Cam Newton on your big board?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Did you have Tebow?
No, I actually left him off. I don't
you
know why.
You left Tim Tebow off, but you had Troy Smith on there.
Mm-hmm.
Good God. I hate Tebow, but even I think that's egregious. That's an affront to the Lord.
For 2,500 yards his senior year when he won the Heisman.
Well, you know, mistakes were made.
He won the Heisman throwing like Joe Burrow's junior year.
Yeah, except he threw for 30 touchdowns that year. I mean, he's played in the Big Ten, so he didn't throw against anybody.
Well, the team was also very good too. So around him, so
he was the best quarterback on the best team in the regular season, not the one at the end of the year.
Exactly. That was what Chris Leak
and Tim Tebow.
Yeah, Tebow the backup slash role player. All right, that finalizes that. How about listener questions? What kind of listener questions we got?
We got a bunch. Let's start with something simpler. This is from Alton Dills. He says, what team we must watch football for any reason, good or bad, this fall?
The easy answer for this, and I'll pick another team as well, but the easy answer is always Oklahoma, right? Because their defense is never that good and the offense is always exciting. So the games can, as long as they're not playing like an SEC school, usually you can at least get some fun out of that. But must watch football.
I thought you were going to go with your man crush there.
I mean, that's initial thought is Iowa State, because I do think that offense is going to be fun with the emergence of Bryce Hall in the backfield, Charlie Kohler at tight end. They have some decent wide receivers there now too. Now that that's all kind of around them, Brock Purdy is going to be pretty fun to watch this year. So if you ever catch them on the big TV, the big screen, make sure to keep them on. I'm going to pass this back to you guys while I think of some other schools here.
So this is going to be very cliche, but I'm going to take USC here because with Keaton Slovis coming back, Stephen Carr is coming back. You've got, why am I blanking on their wide receiver that they also brought? It's not Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's in the NFL now. They have another one, really, really good guy. And then they have Brew McCoy as well. I think they're going to score a lot of points. I don't know if the defense is really going to stop too many people, but I think they're going to.
Amon-Ra St. Brown or whatever his name is. He's not in the NFL. He's still
He's still in colleges. I'm thinking of Equanimeous or whatever the other one, the dude from Notre Dame.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, Amon-Ra Brown is still there.
All right, so they're going to have a bunch of playmakers there. I think they're going to score a lot of points. Like I said, I don't know if they're going to stop anybody, but it's going to be exciting to watch them play.
See, I don't have any, like, one team. I have, like, some teams that I feel like could end up being good, like they're ones to watch early on.
Please.
I mean, Ohio State's obviously going
to be fun. Oh, my gosh, you can't pick them.
Hold on. No, no, no. There's a butt coming. Just wait for it.
Typical gamble. It's always
the thing. I mean, if you're asking for a good, fun football game to watch, like their offense was electric last year. I think they're going to repeat that this year. So you're going to see a lot of fun offense, and their defense is going to shut people down.
Like, yeah, it's not fun when it's 35-2 after the end of the first quarter.
Yeah. First of all, Ohio State giving up a safety is weird, but we did that last year. Anyway, I'm going to say Tennessee, and it doesn't make any sense. I feel like they're going to be a fun, like the way they ended last year coming into this year, I feel like they can carry that momentum and be a fun, productive team to watch with their 80 million recruits.
Even though I like that's when Tennessee year. Twitter explodes, so I usually hope for them to be bad because it's really funny watching Tennessee explode.
Well, again, then on Twitter, bad reason, if they end up tanking, then you're just incredibly entertained on Twitter.
Shit.
I feel like Kansas could also end up being fun to watch.
Shut up.
Hell yeah.
Shut the hell up.
North Carolina could be good. Sam Howell and company.
That's the other one I was going to say.
Yeah. North Carolina is one for sure. Obviously, assuming things are good and patched up, Oklahoma State with Chuba Hubbard and Tylan Wallace coming back, depending on Spencer Sanders. Also, they're going to blow everybody out of the water, but like if they're ever on TV, watch a North Dakota State game, because Trey Lance is the truth, man. That kid is so talented. I cannot believe he's playing it in the FCS right now. But go catch him and watch him spin a football. It is pretty exciting. So, also, who knows? That North Dakota State by the end of the season might be in the top 25. They're inching ever closer. They've got to get there eventually.
All right, so we're going to go, what team do you think will make the biggest step up compared to last year, and which will you think takes the biggest tumble? So who jumps up and who goes down? Just one team of each.
Biggest tumble, the obvious answer is LSU. Still think they're going to be a top 25 team, but without Joe Brady, without Joe Burrow, without like 16 players that left, they're going to probably fall down a bit. I imagine they'll probably be somewhere from between 10 and 20 throughout most of the season. But I do think they take the biggest tumble. What about you guys?
The biggest tumble, I think Utah, because they replace a lot of production, and we just don't know what it's going to be. I know they've got a couple different transfers. They've got a transfer quarterback. They've got the dude from South Carolina coming in, Jake Bentley, potentially starting. I think they got another one there as well. So we just don't really know what they're going to have, but they were on the cusp of making the playoff last year. I think they're looking more like an 8-win team this year at the most. I think you're just losing way too much talent.
I'm going to go with Baylor for mine to take a bigger tumble. They finished 11-3 last year. I can't imagine with all of the coaching turnover that they end up in the same spot. I could kind of see them dropping off in the Big 12, losing a few more games because they also won a ton of tight games last year. I feel like some of those are going to turn into losses, and they're going to end up, I don't know, like an 8-5 type team.
How about biggest riser?
I'll let you guys go first.
So I'm trying to pull up their schedule real quick, but I don't know if they're going to be the biggest riser, but I think they're going to be a lot better than what people think. I'm going to take Oregon State here just because their non-conference schedule, they play Oklahoma State, Colorado State, Portland State. Two of the three, they should win. Oklahoma State's probably going to be a loss. The North is a big question mark because Washington and Washington State both replaced their coaches. Cal was hit or miss last year. Stanford has kind of been on the downside. I think Colorado is in the South. Or is Colorado in they're in the South too, but they, in their crossover games, they have UCLA, Utah, Arizona. So those are all winnable games. The only games I think there'll be super tough for them where they might be out of it early are Oklahoma State. I could see Arizona State and Oregon. I think are those three games that you kind of look at and say, like, those are most likely losses, but I think they can compete in the rest of the games. So I could see Oregon State going 8-4 this year, which would be a significant improvement for them.
If I have to pick, I have two that are kind of actually on my mind here. UNC, we kind of just talked about. They have the potential to be a big jump. Their schedule just isn't the greatest early on for it. They play UCF and Auburn to start their season. So that could be a little bit tough for them. The other one, I mean, I guess now I'm biased, but Arizona State, I was going to say, is another one. Could be competing for that Pac-12 title with Jaden Daniels coming back. I don't know how much talent they lost overall, but I think they had a pretty good core there. So coming back, I think both of those two teams could kind of rise in their conferences. I don't know how close they'll get to like top 10 ever, but they'll both be pretty good teams to keep an eye on this year.
Yeah, I think North Carolina is definitely a good option. They played pretty well throughout the course of last year. They have some dynamic receivers on the outside, and Sam Howell, obviously, one of the best young quarterbacks out there. I also think you mentioned it before with the must-watch football, but USC, I think, is also in a position that they could rise up here. I'm a big believer in Keaton Slovis. I think he's going to be a very good quarterback moving forward for them. And the obvious, the homer pick, Miami. Just the offense, if everything clicks right, I think they're going to take a big step forward this year. Who knows what happens after that? But I've said it time and time again here on the podcast, but they went out and they found all the issues they needed to correct, and they corrected them with players that, you know, have experience. They're not incoming freshmen or anything like that. They're guys who have played. They actually just added a grad transfer tackle from Houston, Jared Williams. In this past week as well, to go with De'Eriq King. So some more help on the offensive tackle spot as well there. So, I mean, that's another big thing moving forward. So if all things click, I think it's them. I look at Miami's schedule. They're obviously, I'm not saying they're going to go undefeated, but there's not a game on that schedule that's, you know, it's, they don't play Alabama until next year, luckily, but there's not a game on that schedule I look at and say, you know, definitely going to lose that one. So if all things click, they certainly will be an option as well for that.
So the next question we have is related to COVID-19. Big Red N98 says thoughts on potential altered schedule due to COVID, possible just regional games. Gibble, you want to take that one first?
I mean, I'll give it a whack.
Can you not?
I guess. I mean, you can take it.
Preferably not.
Wait, when we're saying regional games, just like not playing their out of conference, not going like across country and things like that.
Like Ohio State's non-conference game is no longer Oregon. It's now Pitt.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely hurts some of the strength of schedule stuff. For Ohio State specifically in that scenario, I am blanking on other games that are going across country, but I think that would be kind of the biggest downfall to it. But the positive is you just get college football. So I think
it could help some other people starting to schedule though.
It could help some people. Yeah. I mean, if instead of playing, I don't know, Pitt, they played like West Virginia or something, that could
Miami's
help out.
Gonna get that revenge.
How is playing Pitt or West Virginia the same thing? Like, are you saying Ohio State? Cause West Virginia is not going to be that much better than Pitt.
Yeah, typically a little bit better. Anyway,
didn't West Virginia not make a bowl game last year?
Well,
probably. Neither team was great last year.
Neither team's great.
Let's be frank.
I don't know. My brain just goes to West Virginia typically being better. Anyway,
it's not going to happen.
No, I think at this point it almost feels too late to say, oh, we're going to scrap some of these cross country games for people, unless you're just completely eliminating them. I don't know if there's still enough time to really adjust schedules like that. That's such a short time frame.
Yeah, I mean that's the biggest issue with it. I don't necessarily think it's a thing that happens. I think if a team decides they don't want to go, if USC decides they don't want to travel cross country to play Texas or wherever they're playing Alabama, I forget. If they don't want to travel cross country for that, I think you'd have to like call it a forfeit or something. I don't know. But I do think it's a little bit too late in the game, and ADs already have their hands full with trying to figure out attendance and monetary things and all that as well. And now to sit here and say 2 months before the start of the season, when primarily all those games are in the opening, start of the year, trying to adjust schedules and stuff like that and try and switch teams around. You have not only do you have to find local opponents, but you have to find local opponents that also need to cancel those games against teams that are across country. And those might not be viable options, especially more farther out west you go and stuff like that as well. So I don't necessarily see it happening at this point. Who knows? I think if they were going to cancel games like that, I feel like we'd have already heard about it, much like the Ireland trip for Navy and Notre Dame early on in the season. So I don't see it happening at this point, regardless of what ends up happening with COVID moving forward.
So the last question we have, Gibble, you're not going to know anything about this, so you might as well just hit this one out. It says, what happens if Chris Conley doesn't make the last catch in the 2012 SEC championship game? That was from Trevor Barwick. You want to go full swim, or you want me to take that one to start?
I want to let you take this one because this has a lot of bearing on my life as a football fan as well. So I
had to go back and try to remember this because this was like 8 years ago at this point, and I couldn't even remember it until I looked it up, and then I kind of remember how the play happened. Like, if he doesn't make the catch, I don't think anything changes because then, like, he was down at the 5 yard line. Like, are they throwing another Hail Mary? There's a good chance, like, they're not going to get it. If you want to say he catches it and, like, goes out of bounds or something from the 5 yard line, like, I don't know if I trust Aaron Murray to score. I mean, if you want to say for the sake of that they managed to win, I think that changes the whole Mark Richt timeline because I don't think Mark Richt leaves Georgia. I don't think he gets fired from Georgia because they almost certainly beat Notre Dame. Notre Dame was not a very good football team. They just lucked their way into 12-0. And that Georgia team had Todd Gurley, and they would have just ran through the Notre Dame team just like Alabama did. So I think Georgia would have won the national championship if they managed to win this game. And I think that would have changed Mark Richt. I don't think he would have went to Miami. I think he'd be done coaching at Georgia now, but I don't think you would have Kirby Smart there either.
Yeah. I mean, if Georgia ends up winning that game, if time doesn't run out after he catches it, if they get another playoff and they end up winning, they probably beat Notre Dame. Assuming they do, then obviously Mark Richt probably isn't getting canned a couple years later, which means the Miami program is entirely different right now as well. In the last several years. So there's that entire side of things. But yeah, I do think Mark Richt, maybe by now he got fired. It has been about 8 years, depending on his performance after that. But you probably don't see Kirby Smart in there right now. Who knows where Georgia football is? I feel like Georgia football at this point would probably still be around the same spot that they are, maybe a little worse than where Kirby Smart has them as a perennial top five or so team.
We can agree it probably doesn't change Alabama's timeline too much at all, right?
No, I don't. Yeah, I mean, nothing really changes with Alabama. They're going to come right back anyway and still be good. The only thing, I mean, granted, 2013, you had Auburn and the kick six. So there's that. But yeah, I mean, it probably doesn't change Alabama's. They've been so dominant for so long that I think one loss in the SEC title game there probably doesn't change a whole lot.
They already had two national championships, so it's not like it was going to be, going back for a second one. You know, they already had two and they won the previous year.
Yeah, it's hard to say. But yeah, I don't necessarily think it has a ton of change on either program, to be quite honest with you. I think Georgia maybe wins a national championship, but that's it after that.
If anything, it buys Mark Richt a couple more years.
And yeah, and maybe with a national championship in hand, Mark Richt makes the program continuously a top five team. Who knows? So it's hard to say, but I'd imagine that's maybe the best case scenario for Georgia. The worst case scenario is they win the national title and then Mark Richt doesn't end up getting fired and he stays a lot longer. Georgia's sitting somewhere around 9-10 wins tops every year or something like that. But
I think worst case is you lose to Notre Dame in the national championship somehow.
That too. Notre Dame team.
Championship for some godforsaken reason.
Oh God. That would be the worst case scenario for all of college football. Notre Dame winning a national title sometime in the current century. So that's kind of where I think that ends up being. So, all right.
That was all of our listener questions for this week.
All righty. Well, remember, you can find us on social media at Walk On Red Shirts on Twitter, and I believe at the Walk On Red Shirts on Instagram, if I have that correct. Yep. Also, make sure you check out our YouTube page, Walk On Red Shirts podcast, for Jake's half hour huddle with a bunch of former college football players, some interesting half hour conversations with a lot of interesting names that you remember, but wouldn't necessarily remember off the top of your head. So it's a fun little rabbit hole to go down, spend some time there. On our next episode, again in 2 weeks, it's going to be a fan appreciation thing. We're going to open it up on Twitter, see what you guys want us to talk about. Not necessarily listener questions, but different topics or anything like that we can dive into. We'll have Jake throw that up a little bit later on in the week, and we'll get on that. And then again, after that, we're going to be back to weekly episodes previewing the season. We are going about this the same as everybody else in the college football world, just anticipating the start of the year and assuming it's going to happen. But yeah, we'll be back on weekly schedule. And then once the season starts, we're actually going to be on 2 episodes a week, previews and reviews. And that'll be a lot of fun. We'll break down games, get a bit more into the discussion with you guys, and hope for a better season, hope for a safe season. And, yeah, I mean, we'll see you guys in 2 weeks.